Well, we talked, I guess, last week with Trammell Crow, sort of our father of Earth Day and EarthX and everything else, and it got us thinking about the coming Earth Day celebration. And one of the cool aspects of, you know, consideration of the environment is the adoption of these LEED certified buildings that I think help the developers and certainly seem to help the environment. Emily Residential, you know him from the Fountain Place development and also out at the ballpark, you know, have taken a lead in LEED. And it's a great excuse to check in again with Phil Tagg, who's the president of Amley Residential, joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
I hate the poor pun, but
I know the pun was wonderful. I was thinking about using it myself.
So first of all, do me a favor, tell me, and I looked this up now, I've already forgotten it. But LEED is an acronym. LEED stands for, what is it, leadership? I've lost it now again.
Environmental and energy development.
Exactly. Okay. So tell me about, because you've got, I think, 77 properties, about over half of them, 49, are LEED certified. Tell me what does it take to be LEED certified?
Well, you have to meet. There is a handbook, a set of policies that you have to attain a certain percentage of them with a certain intensity in order to score sufficient points. It's a point-based system to attain the certification. And the United States Green Building Council, which manages the LEED program and awards the certifications, they are constantly reviewing the policies. Their general goal is for only about 10% of properties developments to attain the LEED certification. And so as more properties attain LEED certification, they feel their job is to ratchet up the requirements. And so every 3 to 4 years, the requirements become more intense.
Really?
And more difficult to attain. Yes. And so I think our first LEED certified property was certified in 2009. And the standards now are materially more difficult than they were in 2009.
But give me an example. We were talking about like reflective glass and recycled materials and that sort of
thing. Lots of energy conservation practices.
And does it cost more initially for you as a developer, as a builder?
Yes, like with anything, it depends on the circumstances. High rises tend to be a lot more expensive. Mid-rise buildings are more expensive, but not a lot more. And garden-style apartments with surface parking are a little bit less usually. High rises typically are because the window pattern on the wall is a lot more extensive than on mid-rise and low-rise buildings. And so consequently, there's a lot more energy loss, and it's harder to offset that.
So in the long run, I would guess, I mean, you get substantial utility savings out of this. Does it pay for itself ultimately?
Well, in the apartment industry, obviously, most residents pay utilities directly. And so we as the developer don't receive any direct benefit other than from the common areas, energy usage. And there is a savings there. You know, arguably, we're getting a little higher rent from residents who are saving money on utilities. That is hard to prove and demonstrate, but that's the argument
You've taught me something. I didn't know that apartments were individually metered. I guess I haven't lived in an apartment, and so I've been married so long, I haven't done it.
We would set one up for you for tomorrow. We'd welcome signing you up. Yeah, so it is a rare apartment that has been built over the last 15 years that is not individually metered for all the utility systems or sub-metered. Water is typically sub-metered.
So we talked a couple of years ago, and you were, like all of us, coming out of COVID and, you know, picking up the pieces and everything else. And in your case, you had a what is it, a 35 or 40 story building downtown Dallas to try to fill up post COVID. That evidently worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah, it was, you know, the neighborhood has become better. There's been some development of services, restaurants, entertainment in the area, new office buildings in the area. So the convenience of living where our building is to employment is a factor. But it was a big risk, and COVID made it even riskier. And yet during the COVID period, after the initial shock wore off, apartment demand was actually pretty high. And, you know, obviously rents rose a good bit during the mid-21 to mid-22 period of time.
Well, now one would think they might be beating a path to your door. I saw a survey the other day said it's three times more expensive to own a home than rent.
House prices went up even more than rents did, so during that period of time, and they have not declined, notwithstanding high interest rates.
Construction costs have gone up too. Obviously, interest rates have gone up. Are you all active? Are you building anything right now?
We have about seven active projects. One is in Dallas, a suburb of Dallas, Addison,
The treehouse, right?
Yeah, treehouse.
I've seen a lot written about that, actually.
We love Addison. It's a great city, and it's got a good combination of uses, not just all single family. And we have two projects in Austin. So in the great state of Texas, we got three projects altogether, and four in other cities.
And the other cities, because you all operate in, you know, South Florida and Southern California and Seattle and Chicago, and obviously they're in Atlanta. So what's hot right now? What areas?
Well, it varies. Chicago, as we were discussing before we started the call, has had difficulties the last 10 years, and we have not been very active there. Southeast Florida, on the other hand, Miami area, has been so far above expectations that it is almost unbelievable. And it was partly COVID-based, obviously, as lots of people apparently moved from the Northeast down to Miami during the COVID period. And so a lot of financial firms moved jobs down there as well. And so the imbalance between demand for housing and the amount of housing that was being created was more substantial there than anywhere. Our two cities or areas on the West Coast that are along the coast, Seattle and Los Angeles, San Diego area, have been somewhat slower than the Sunbelt cities to bounce back. I think that's partly because there's so many technology companies in both areas, and many of the technology companies have not made people return to their offices yet. And some of those people don't even live in those cities anymore. And so the apartment market hasn't been quite as strong in coastal cities.
So I didn't realize you had seven at various stages of development right now. So you're a great source. Let me pick your brain. Where are we right now? Are there any of the supply chains all greased and everything's working again? First.
Kind of. If you could buy some fuses for us or breakers, we'd buy them from you for a markup immediately. So the only thing with the supply chain related, and it affects everybody, are electrical circuits and supplies. And much of that is manufactured overseas. And with all these data centers being built around the country, there's been enormous demand for electrical equipment. And so that's the only thing that has an unusually long lead time. We place orders now close to 2 years in advance of when we expect to get them delivered. So there's, you know, there's kind of a black market in them now, and it's, you know, it'll return to normal at some point in time. But these data centers being built are a huge user. You know, from a broader perspective, multifamily housing is slowing down a lot in new starts. interest rates are high, which affects people's perception of what the rate of return should be. Construction costs remain as high as they've ever been in our life. I don't know that they're growing anymore, but they are not declining. And rents are softening everywhere in the country, partly because so much new supply was started in the period of 2020 to 23. And so there's going to be a period of softness for a couple of years.
What about labor? Are you having labor challenges at these new construction sites?
Yes, I think everybody's having labor challenges. Most industries are. Construction laborers, a huge number, millions of people left the workforce or the industry during the Great Recession when construction essentially ground to a halt. And so the average age of laborers in the construction industry is quite high right now. And because there just weren't young people either that wanted to join the industry coming out of the Great Recession. And so there's tremendous demand for labor in the construction trades, particularly experienced or trained labor. Even our multifamily property management operation is difficult to maintain capacity, the right capacity in our system. Unemployment rates obviously very low, and it's affecting all, I think it's affecting every sector.
Well, you must have been helped by technology, though, along the way. And I mean, I don't know about artificial intelligence, but whether it's managing your properties, keeping up with things, supply chain management, you know, our architectural services, that must give you some efficiencies, right?
We're using all those things and testing many others. It has resulted in some reduction in certain areas, but I don't think it has had very, very broad application yet, either in our company or throughout the economy. It probably will, but I think it's 5 years off before it does.
Well, they've got robots building houses down in Austin.
I know that. I've been to that site, and it's certainly interesting. And, you know, that may well happen. That may well spread quickly. Right now, there's still doubt about the efficiency and the accuracy of doing it like that.
Well, keep the dirt flying. You build beautiful buildings. Phil Teggs, the president of Amley Residential, and happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you, too.
Thanks a lot for more of our conversation. Go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.